picture this thing.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for attending this wonderful breakfast. The food looks wonderful, and hopefully you're enjoying your morning so far. My name is Kevin Alansky. I'm the Senior Director of Marketing for Blackboard, and again, I want to thank you all for coming. We have a wonderful and exciting new material, new presentation today from Julie Evans. Most of you know, she's the CEO of Project Tomorrow, and has been doing the Speak Up survey now since 2003 with about 1.2 million people have taken the survey. And this year, we have some groundbreaking new information and new leadership study where Julie and her team have interviewed administrators, and there's a nice correlation and importance of the 21st century skills and importance of keeping students engaged that fits nicely with Blackboard's mission and vision, which is to help bridge the gap between the way students are living and the way they are learning. And with that said, we have a few panelists today and a nice presentation and hopefully thought-provoking discussion. That said, Julie Evans.
Thank you, Kevin. Well, to echo Kevin's comments, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We are really excited about the release of this new report that we have done once again this year in conjunction with Blackboard. And so we appreciate Blackboard's support. And of course, I want to thank them not only for their support of the report and Speak Up, but also for this wonderful breakfast this morning. So while I'm talking, everybody just continue along, enjoy your breakfast, and drink your coffee. As Kevin said, we have a really nice program for you here this morning. I want to start off with this quote, which was actually captured for us in the report itself. And this is from Nick Nicholson, who is with Chicago Public Schools. And he hit on some key points that I thought were really poignant this morning. One is that he talked about technology being a thoughtless, seamless process. And the thoughtless at one point seems a little callous, but then the seamless part makes you think about how it's just totally integrated and ubiquitous in the education learning. And he goes on to talk about, well, if you go into a classroom, you just pick up a piece of chalk. You don't really think about it. And technology should be as automatic as picking up a piece of chalk. And then the other two points that I really like about this quote from Nick is he talks about how the newer teachers are expecting this and the students are totally expecting this. And so we have a responsibility to respond to that as well. So what we're going to do today is that I'm going to give you just a really highlight version of some of the key findings from the report itself. You did all get a copy of the report. And then we have some voices of experience. We have three panelists that are going to share some of their viewpoints with us. And I really like that part of the presentation because we'll hear a little bit from them. But I'm going to do less questioning of them and give the opportunity for you to ask them some questions as well. And then, of course, I'm going to invite you, if you're representing a school or district, to participate in Speak Up 2008 and let you know a little bit about that. Our voices of experience today will be from Jim Klein, Ryan Embrioli, and Paul Sanford, San Francisco. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that when we get to that part of the program. So if you are not familiar with Speak Up, let me give you sort of a 1, 2, 3 on the Speak Up project. It is a national research project. It's conducted 100% through online surveys and then validated on the back end with interviews and focus groups. As Kevin said, we've been doing this since fall of 2003, and we started this process in fall of 2003 because we were sensing, as many of you were sensing, a digital disconnect between how students were using technology, thinking about technology, aspiring to use technology within learning, and what the adults around them were surrounding with from a technology standpoint. And so we were seeing this disconnect and wanted to really pick up from the students themselves an authentic voice on what their goals and aspirations were. We subsequently have included teachers in a separate survey, parents in a separate survey, and for the first time last year, we polled school and district administrators. Really a fascinating slice of the data is the administrator data, not only for the data itself, but also comparing and contrasting with the student view. As Kevin said, about 1.2 million surveys have been supplied to us or provided to us, and that represents all kinds of schools all across the country. Speak Up is facilitated by the nonprofit that we represent, Project Tomorrow. Our focus in Project Tomorrow is making sure that today's students are well prepared for the jobs and careers of the future. And we happen to believe that science, math, and technology are key levers for them. So in the 2007 survey, we asked these type of question areas. We, of course, asked about learning and teaching with technology, which we have been doing from the beginning. We asked about 21st century skills, some Web 2.0 stuff. We did a thematic set of questions around science instruction and the global competitiveness agenda, and also some questions around emerging technologies in the classroom, online learning, mobile devices, and gaming. And then every year we ask all of our respondents, so if you were in charge, whether you're a student, a teacher, a parent, or a school administrator, if you were in charge of designing that ultimate 21st century classroom for today's learners, what technology would you include in that classroom? And so we'll get a little bit of that. I gave you the lineup of the questions because, as I said, we're going to be focusing just in on the administrator data today, a slice of that. There's a lot more data on our website. So if you have a particular interest area there and I don't cover it, you may want to go and check that out. We are looking at the data from last year. We had about 367,000 surveys submitted to us nationwide from about 3,800 schools. And the school and district administrator slice was about 3,200. That were provided to us. You can see what the top 10 states were in terms of participation. And then since we have the NCES database as the back end of our database, we're able to slice and dice the data based on those identifiers. And we're always quite pleased with our outreach efforts that we are bringing into our data set schools that are Title I schools or majority minority schools. So the research question that we had when we started this was, what are the behaviors, the value statements, the aspirations of our school and district-based administrators regarding their own technology use and, more importantly, technology use within instruction itself. And so from that research question, we have formed this new report that we're calling Leadership in the 21st Century, the New Visionary Administrator. And thank you so much for joining us. Today is the actual national release. The report will be available, downloadable from Blackboard as of, I think, finally now. You can also get to it through our website, tomorrow.org. So just to give you a little bit of a profile of the administrators that run the survey, I mentioned the 3,263. There were a portion of those that were principals, assistant principals, they were school-based, and then the other subset of that were district-based administrators, some superintendents, some assistant superintendents, CIOs, CTOs. It was really interesting in going through some of the data, and I did this presentation yesterday, was actually looking at the contrast to some extent between the district administrators and the school site administrators, and we have more of that data in our website. About two-thirds of the administrators in the poll were women. 39% had 11 plus years of administrative experience, and you can see almost half of them had at least a master's in education. So here's sort of the big picture key finding, and then I'm going to slice it down a little bit finer for you, is that what we found in the data in looking at the subset of school and district administrators, and to be honest with you, it sort of came as a surprise to us. It's sort of nice when you're doing the analysis and you go, oh, look, this is interesting, and we just sort of track this down a little bit further. But what we found was that there was a new cohort that appears to be emerging amongst our administrator ranks, what we're calling visionary administrators, who share some common behaviors amongst themselves as compared to their peers that are, shall we say, the not visionary administrators. So they have some common behaviors, some values, some aspirations. Not visionary, yes. The other thing that's characteristic about these visionary administrators is not only do they share commonality within themselves as a cohort, they also appear to have more in common with their students than they do with their peers. And that is how it's really significant. So let me take you through some of this data and show you where this is coming from. And obviously the report goes into a lot more detail than what we're going to be able to do today. The methodology was based on the analysis of the data, and then we also went out and interviewed 9 different administrators. Six of them were from district level positions, the other 3 were from school site positions. They represented about 7 different districts. The report was authored for us by Karen Henke from Nimble Press. Okay, so who are these visionary administrators? That's what we're going to cover here this morning. Who are they? What does this profile look like? Well, the first thing that we saw was that a really strong 93% of them believe that using technology improves student achievement. That's about a 10-point increase over general administrators at large. 100% said that effective technology, I'm sorry, I'm standing right in front of you, I'm going to try and stand back. Effective technology use is important to their school or district vision. We also said that they were most likely, when we disaggregate the data, more likely to rate their tech skills as advanced as opposed to the whole lot of administrators. And they were also twice as likely as their peers to use the technology we're talking about, the same technology that the students are using. In some cases, they even outpaced the student use of the technology. So let's look at this particular slide. I know there's a lot on here. Just so that you can understand what we're following. The blue is the dark blue are the visionary administrators. The light blue are all the other administrators in the poll. And then the greeny yellow color is our students, our middle school and high school students. So if we look at, for example, the downloading of music, which from our data was the number one activity that middle school and high school students are doing currently using technology, listening and downloading music. You'll see that obviously the students are a little bit more advanced, but our visionary administrators are almost right up there. So a significant difference from the general administrator poll. When we look at things like remixing content, we even see that our visionary administrators are a little bit more advanced than the students, same in terms of blog and wiki entries. When we look at things such as emailing or instant messaging a student, or looking and listening to, creating or listening to videos and podcasts, you can see that the visionary administrators are outpacing their peers. So we thought it was really interesting to do this compare and contrast. Almost 100% of them said that tech use within instruction was a wake-up issue for them. We asked the administrators, what is it that wakes you up in the middle of the night? And we gave them a list of all kinds of different things. There was only one that had a technology piece to it. But our visionary administrators, every single one of them, rated that technology use in their top five. As opposed to, as you can see, only 39% of the other administrators did that. So definitely a different perception. They're looking at the use of technology differently in their schools and districts. They were also more interested in the incorporation of 21st century skills into instruction. And we know we're already seeing the linkages between the administrators that are interested in 21st century skills and their effective use of technology, and so we were able to document that here. They also view assessment within the context of 21st century skills, so predominantly as a measure of technology effectiveness. So when we ask the administrators, what's the most effective way for you to measure the impact of technology within your school and district? You can see, once again, our dark blue visionary administrators, that they significantly outpace their peers in terms of looking at 21st century skill assessment as a good predictor or evaluation tool for technology impact. They also were looking more seriously at some of the other assessment measures as well. We also found that tech skill assessment and evaluating emerging technologies were on the radar screen for these visionary administrators in much greater numbers than they were for their peers. So when we asked them, what are your top challenges to implementing technology in your school or district? Sure, they followed in line with their regular peers from an administration standpoint in terms of funding, professional development, and funding both for new technologies and update technologies. But look at how they outpaced their peers in terms of looking at the evaluation of emerging technologies and how to assess student tech skills as real issues that they were facing in terms of their school or district. So they have, as we are saying, a different orientation than their peers. And then when we took a look at their 21st century school or classroom vision, that question where we asked them to develop or to design that ultimate school, their vision, once again, is more in line with the student vision than the administrators at large. So I have a couple different slides here for you. This one is comparing, once again, the visionary administrator, the regular administrators, and the students. And you can see from a laptop standpoint, which is the number one answer that the students have given us for the last 4 years, every student wants their own laptop. The visionary administrators actually are outpacing their students in support of that. They're also outpacing the students and the other administrators in terms of multimedia, having equipment, digital equipment for students to create multimedia presentations, their use of interactive whiteboards, online databases, communication tools, and also online classes. When we asked them specifically about online learning or online classes, what we found was really interesting, that they are looking at this from a standpoint, not just in terms of what would you do to enhance or expand your learning, but also in terms of what would be the impact for the students in terms of keeping students engaged in their school. And when we looked at some of those other emerging technologies, the things that are really on the leading edge, we again saw, once again, the blue are the visionary administrators, that in many of these areas, they are more in sync with their students than with their peers. So the idea of being able to use mobile learning devices within the classroom, you see that they are more in line with the students there. In terms of Web 2.0 activities, in terms of looking at even student response systems. And whereas the students still are outpacing all of us in terms of their interest in gaming, we are going to be tracking these visionary administrators to see where that goes over the next couple years in terms of evaluating that. So that was just a couple of the highlights from the report. The report is very deep in terms of going into a lot more detail for you. And I think the thing that's most significant in the report are the 9 interviews. Because what we found was that there was not necessarily one clear-cut way for these visionary administrators to implement their vision. There was, in fact, multiple different ways. And I think there's some really interesting learnings from the report in itself. So just a couple quick things in terms of next steps, and then I'd like to have our panel come up. The report, as I mentioned, is available at blackboard.com. You can also get to it through shamara.org. We're going to be continuing this conversation, as we have done with the other reports, on our Speak Up blog, and we'd love to have some of your thoughts with that. And then, of course, I can't leave our session today without interesting you or enticing you to participate in Speak Up 2008. We do have a number of different data reports that are on our website, including a report that we did last year with Blackboard on online learning. If you've not previously seen that report, we also did an update to that report that we released in June. And then we have a report just looking at our science education on our website as well. We'd be happy to have you take a look at that. Lots of different things on our website. And then just so that you know, Speak Up 2008, we actually did open up the surveys on Monday. They'll be open until December 19th. If you're not familiar with Speak Up, this is a wonderful way for you to hear from your stakeholders. Every participating school and district gets access to their own data, and that data will be available to the beginning of February. Why schools and districts participate with us in Speak Up, it's primarily to get that data from their stakeholders. And that may be your students, it may be parents, and maybe you've never thought of your administrators as a stakeholder to engage in the conversation. We also will have schools and districts that will participate with us because they have a certain initiative that they're kicking off, whether it's a laptop initiative, a professional development opportunity, some sort of new program or curricular area that they are focusing on with their students. And they are looking for that sort of input. As I mentioned before, surveys are available for K-12 students. We have younger kids surveys, older kids surveys, teachers, parents, and again with administrators this year. The parent survey is available in English and Spanish. Surveys take about 15-20 minutes to complete. This is open to every school or district in the country to participate. All your data is confidential, and as I said, a couple people had asked me to talk a little bit about this year's questions. We are going to be continuing to ask on the thematic areas that we have been asking, learning and teaching with technology, Web 2.0, 21st century skills, all those emerging technology areas, and design in 21st century schools. And the new areas that we're going into, a really big area that we're focusing on this year is digital content, both from a standpoint of a teacher perspective, administrator perspective, but also the student and parent perspective. The question that I'm really excited about, and I have to tell you, we just opened the survey on Monday, and I can't wait to see the data, is that we are asking students to design their own online textbook. So if they were designing an online textbook, what is the feature and functionality that they would like to have in their textbook? And then we're asking that same question to the parents, to get a parent point of view. We really think that's going to be interesting. We're asking a series of questions this year on broadband access and policy, which should be very, very interesting. And then also a subset of our 21st century skills questions around information and media literacy specifically. What are the skills that students, teachers, parents, and administrators think are the key parts of that? How are students being acquiring those skills? How are they authenticating resources? All these things that we've been talking about, we're going to be collecting some of that data. So we think that'll really add to the data set for you. We have some wonderful sponsors that help us every year, some wonderful organizations, and also work with some key partners, about 100 nonprofit partners. These are our lead outreach partners, including MSP. As I said, survey's opened on Monday. I think as Lori Smith, who's from our team, is out in the front, I think when I checked this morning, because we're kind of data nerds, we're tracking our numbers all the time, we already had about 3,800 surveys that had been submitted on Monday and Tuesday. We're anticipating about 400,000 surveys will be submitted this year. So, without any discussion.
Can I just ask a question? How do you determine between visionary responses from visionary administrators and not visionary administrators?
What we did is that we had a couple proxy questions in the survey that we went through and we pulled out data specifically. It was really along the lines of how are they viewing the data as a core part of their mission, and how, where they were on a spectrum in terms of the value of technology for driving student achievement. So we used those as proxies and then did all our cross-tab analysis against that. Okay, so if my esteemed panel would come up and join us. We have everybody here. Right up here. And by the way, if anyone wants this presentation, we will have this on our website. We also are recording the whole presentation today, including the panel discussion, and we'll be creating a podcast from that. That will also be available on our website.
In the middle. All right.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here this morning. We have, going from, I guess, my right, your left, Ryan Embrioli.
Right, morning.
He was the assistant principal at Perry Hall High School in Baltimore County Public Schools in Maryland. We have Jim Klein, who is, I have to make sure I have my titles right, who is the Director of Information Sciences and Technology?
Services
and Technology at Saugus Union School District, which is just north of Los Angeles. And then Paul Sanfrancesco, who is with Garnet Valley School District, Director of Technology at Garnet Valley, and that's in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for all of you joining us. Oh, and I have to make a point, we're so honored. Both Jim and Paul, no, I'm sorry, both, let me get this right. Ryan and Paul, though I'm sure Jim would be, are part of the NSBA's 20 to watch.
All three of us are, I think.
I am too.
You are too.
All three. Yeah.
All three. All three of you.
All three.
I was going to say, I think you were going to hang out with
you, Ryan. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so let's get into this. What I'd like to hear from each one of you, if you have some thoughts on this, and none of these three gentlemen were interviewed in our report, so they were not identified in the report specifically or have a profile, so this is all new information for all of us here, is what's your reaction to some of these findings that we have here in the report?
Oh, you want me to? I'll start.
You start, left or right.
I'm not surprised at all when I see information that sort of demonstrates this gap that exists between the visionary administrator and, I'm not sure what we want to call the other group, but the rest of them. In my own experience, in my school, we have about 2,400 students, and there's a team of six of us. And there's, of that team of six, I'm the youngest. And what was interesting to me is, and this is just from my own experience in Baltimore County and working at Perry Hall High School, is what would happen if you lay over the demographics on top of that information. In my own experience, what I've seen is there's an interesting mix in terms of the generation of administrator that you're looking at with those, oftentimes with those visionary qualities. That's not always the case, but in my particular situation, our most heated battles that we have behind closed doors as an administrative team often deal with technology. And how to deal with it on the school level. So, and there's an age gap that exists in that group.
So you do see a generational split.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I disagree with that just a little bit. From our district perspective, it's been somewhat different. Our take on technology leadership in general has been a little bit different from those of some others out there who believe that every administrator needs to have tremendous technology skills to have effective technology use in the classroom. I think that's a mistake. I think that's incorrect. And we do have a lot of administrators from various generations, from the top all the way down, mm-hmm. who have different who are very supportive of technology and make sure that people have the resources and all of those sorts of things. So I think the real gap here is really a matter of understanding and a little bit less of skill. And I think that's an important distinction to make when you look at these kinds of numbers. It's more of an understanding gap. And I think that should be our primary focus is raising that understanding level across the board, and you can have an effective technology program throughout your district, regardless of the generational differences.
I think it was interesting. That's a very good point. And in the report, you'll see there's a profile in the report where one of the administrators talks about the fact that she does not consider herself to be a good tech user. She does not consider herself to be an advanced tech user, but that she feels part of her vision has been surrounding herself with people that are very proficient in the use of technology, mm-hmm. and so she's able to leverage that as a resource.
And we talk about that as from the perspective of facilitation. You know, the person has to see the vision, catch the vision, and the potential success of that, and then make those resources and the time available for their people to succeed in that respect. And that really is the most effective, as we found to be the most effective approach to bringing technology in.
I think one of the things that we are really interested in underscoring in this report is that word leadership. That this is not just a visionary administrator, but this is a visionary administrator with leadership. And so that's why we have with the report the leadership in the 21st century, because a lot of things we're talking about really get back to being a good, effective leader. Okay, Paul.
Well, I'm going to go a little different route here. We all did the Speak Up 2000 last year as a whole district, parents, students. We had most of our students do it. And we took all the data and had a board retreat with our school board and did a 21st century administrator student. What does that look like? We took one day and spent the whole day with our board, every administrator in the district. We had some parents involved, and we developed what a 21st century graduate looks like at Garner Valley. Now, you would think we'd have this, it'll come out things. It came out, what does a 21st century administrator and teacher look like? Because the students are there. I mean, from the data and everything, we had to set, you know, all right, this is what the graduate's going to look like. We have that. But it was getting the teachers to be that 21st century teacher, 21st century administrator. What do we have to do? So we came up with all kinds of staff development programs and everything that actually, as a team, administrators being the school board administrators, all came out feeling like they were part of that data and saying, okay, what are our next steps? Because if we get ready, we know the students will just come along with us. So that was major, that as a team, and to getting the board to understand the data and where we're going, provided funding, money, and basically everything we needed to bring the district to a 21st century district, as in, we always concentrate on that 21st century learner and all, which is great, but you need 21st century teachers, and majorly you need 21st century administrators to make this happen. And we did major staff development with both groups that had student input, and it was just amazing what just this data did for our district.
You know, that's a wonderful point in terms of, I think sometimes we get, not to say it's a negative, but we get so focused in on that 21st century learner that we lose sight of the support network that needs to be there to make that happen. Obviously, as you can see just from the opening comments, all three of these gentlemen are obviously part of our new group, our new club called Visionary Administrators.
Congratulations.
In terms of thinking about your own environment, and obviously two of you are at the district level and Ryan is at a school level, what are the challenges that you're facing as a visionary administrator? What are the things that are either waking you up in the middle of the night or things that are on your to-do list for tomorrow or Friday when you get back to the office? What are the hot things that are on your minds right now?
My turn again. I would say some of the things that come up with for me, well, funding is a big one for us. We can plan and talk about all the things that we would like to do in the building, but I'm in a school building that was built in 1959. You know, there's plenty of places in the building where you can't even get your cell phone to work. So, you know, we have challenges just trying to get the technology tools into the building and fund those kinds of tools. So, or, you know, what are we going to do? Use our soda money for from our funding, or because it's not all coming from the district. And so our challenge is when we look in our classrooms, you know, as a, if I am a visionary administrator, then what really concerns me is in my building, the equity from classroom to classroom. You know, students go from one room where we have the technology, we have all the tools there for the teacher to teach, thinking like a 21st century teacher, and the students are engaged in the process. The problem is the student walks out of the classroom, we have a 7-period day, they go to the next classroom, and none of those tools are in there. And our challenge is how do we make that happen for them? And I'm sure it's a challenge for the district as well. And I think that's something that we grapple with. We have X amount of dollars in our budget, and how do we spread that pot, all those pieces around, so it all fits in correctly? You know, and we have to buy, we still are buying textbooks. So we're still doing all those things because we have curriculum, that's using the textbook.
I think that's an interesting point. In full disclosure here, Ryan was on a panel for me yesterday, and so that we did about some of the other aspects of our administrative data. And you brought up that point yesterday, that sort of that digital equity within a school component as a challenge, which I'm hearing all across the country, that, you know, there isn't a universality of experience that a student's going to have from 8 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon necessarily. Their school. I thought that's really,
can I just, what's critical about that is when we talk about 21st century teachers, you very well might have one who is so bogged down in the daily work of being an excellent classroom teacher, but they don't have the tools in their room because of the room they're in, or they're a floating teacher, they're going from classroom to classroom, yet you have another teacher who's in a room with all the digital technology and all the tools, and they're doing exciting things, yet it could be both those teachers, and it's because of what the tools they're given in the particular situation.
Jim?
Well, I would piggyback a little bit on the budgetary thing. I think the thing that frustrates me the most, and this seems to be a regular thing, is choosing the right technology. I mean, to use a fossilized phrase here, we got to start thinking outside the box when it comes to this stuff. One of the problems I see with technology in considerations, I've seen it at this conference, I see it everywhere, is that our focus on the technology, it tends to be based on delivery. How are we going to deliver content, right? Basically, the way I see technology in schools is it divides in half, or divides into two pieces. There is instructional technology, which is what we're always talking about, and there's educational technology, which is what we should be talking about. Instructional technology, because that's easy, because we get it, because it's evolutionary and it doesn't really change the classroom, is the stuff that we end up getting excited about and we focus 80% of our energy on. So we, rather than just regular whiteboards, we put in super whiteboards. And rather than regular overhead projectors, we put in document cameras and things like that, which don't really change anything fundamentally. The real reality of that is that the kids get in these classrooms, and while initially you may see a bump, and we all talk about engagement and all these sorts of things, the numbers flatten out over time because these technologies don't really change the game. Technology has to be at once transparent and essential. So if we were focusing on technology going into the classroom, that technology needs to have an educational goal primarily, not a technology goal primarily. And when we talk technology and education, I fear that we're always talking about staff development, teach our teachers how to use the tech so that they can teach our kids how to use the tech, and it becomes about the tech. You know, the focus, educational goal should be first, and finding the tools that meet that educational goal effectively, efficiently, and invisibly should be our second goal.
I love that component of the transformational nature of this, of all this stuff that we still haven't gotten to. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still have more work to do with that. Obviously, there's one of the things that we were trying to underscore in the report is this idea that this is not a finished product. That we're not down the road. We can't look and say, oh, this is a perfect model, or this is a perfect model, or all we have to do is go and do A, B, and C. That we're still working through all this, whether it's at a district level or at a school level or even as a nation. Paul, some challenges that you face?
Time. It's the major, you know, money and all that, that's great, but it's time. You know, talk to any teacher out there, to any administrator out there, the full plate theory. their plate's broken on the floor somewhere, you know, they've dropped it already, it's too full. And yeah, you lay this technology, you know, it's great, but most teachers don't have the time. And it's what can you take off their plate? What can you, you know, we as administrators, sometimes we have these visions and ideas and it's great, but once you go to the grassroots level, it's not happening because there is too much from the state, too much from the district, too much from parents, too much from, I mean, personal life, it's all there. And then you have the panic look when you bring that smart board in the classroom. You have the panic look when you bring the laptop cart in the classroom. You know, where's the, you know, you still need that hand holding, you still need that, but you also say, we're gonna take this off your plate, you know. It's a real look as an administrator, visionary administrator, to say, yeah, you're going to become a first-year teacher again, but in the long run, your plate will be, something's coming off that plate. I mean, you have to have that conversation to get the support. I mean, you know, a lot of us just say, all right, we're doing this, we're doing that, and we're moving on, you know, this is where we're going, but we forget there's a lot of things we can say, okay, since we're doing this, we're not doing this anymore. Or, you know, like we're talking about the e-textbooks and all, you're going to go a different route, and this is how we're going to go about it. And time worries me all the time because we don't have any more time, and the students have all the time in the world. I mean, they have 24/7. It's a unique experience for administrators to think like that.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, sir, go
ahead. That's been our approach actually with the technology initiatives that we've done is to try to find initiatives that will actually save the teacher's time. You know, that's the big thing, because if you can make this valuable to a teacher, you can establish that buy-in and that enthusiasm to actually get involved in that project. So, for example, our writing project, we're going to be putting little EPCs in the hands of all of our fourth graders. Okay, and we have a writing project. And what's the big problem that you have as a teacher when you're teaching writing? Is time. Because these kids are going to come at you with a writing assignment, and you have to take the time, and each individual kid has individual needs and all those sorts of things. That's an area where technology can really save a tremendous amount of time, because the kids can go online and have that evaluated mechanically as effectively and evenly as a teacher can do it, so that when they bring the teacher that finished copy, it really is the finished copy. It's not the one that had to be marked up for the punctuation and marked up for all the stuff. It's really the finished copy. So again, you have to have those educational goals, but you also have to make it appealing, or you have to encourage teachers that this is going to be of great benefit to them to really establish that kind of a buy-in.
You know, it's interesting. That brings up a really poignant aspect of the Speak Up results this year. You know, for a long time, we've all been talking about the value of technology as engaging students in learning. And we, you know, if we ask teachers, we ask administrators, we ask parents, well, so what's the value? Where's the value proposition around technology? It always comes up around student engagement. And it's interesting, when we talk to the kids and we pull this out of our student data, the kids will say, yeah, the engagement piece is important, but they also talk in terms of productivity. And they talk about the value of using technology within instruction in terms of saving them time, in terms of making them more efficient, more effective, that the information's more accurate, they're better collaborators, they're learning the 21st century skills. The kids actually are speaking in terms of the business terms that we're talking about in terms of productivity, and yet when we look at the value of technology for them, we're still talking about being fun and engaging. So we have to do a head spin also in terms of the language and the way we're approaching the value proposition. Not to say that engagement isn't important, but to think beyond it, that there's more there, and maybe to take a lead from
engagement
the
shouldn't be the goal.
Shouldn't be the end product. Yeah.
And that seems to be
I do have some more questions for them, but I want to see if anyone here in the audience had questions. I wanted to give you a chance to ask them any sort of questions. Anyone have anything? Yes?
Paul, you mentioned that you actually took the data that was collected. Too often data is collected and then put in a nice bank. Mm-hmm. Oh, what you cool, look at how good we are at looking for accurate facts. I was very interested to hear you say that you actually took it and used it and you went on a retreat. That's step one. What happened this year, do you see, and then what happens to happen as far as step two, and really for the other gentleman as well, what did you do with this data that came into your school or into your district, and then what steps did you put into place to then move it, and then how is your sustainability model now being built?
Well, the data was unbelievable with the board. It was an eye-opener. And we use that data almost every board meeting, every principal's meeting, everything comes up. And what we've come up with is a staff development plan. And the board actually, the best thing that came up was we needed more professional development tied with any technology that comes out. So I, you know, the board was all on board plugging smart boards, this, that, and I kept saying no. I said we need to do a technology academy in the summer, and we did it. You know, put applications out. Teachers, if they want the student responsive, if they want this, if they want that, they have to do a week training. We developed this huge program that turned out to be a third of the district teachers came in the summer for a week that we did not pay for. They did not pay the teachers to come. We paid for the equipment. We paid for the graduate credits that they received. But our teachers taught the program. It was a five-day program. It was about curriculum connections. It wasn't about the hardware, but they learned how to use A, B, and C, but they worked all afternoon, every afternoon. And the board loved it, you know, and the district loved it. The parents loved it. And we're seeing this year, if this is last summer, every teacher went through has to do peer sharing with another teacher in their building to say, all right, we got this equipment. We now use it. We use it with our curriculum now. And now I'm teaching somebody else. Look, here's how we do it. Plus, we're putting it in the hands of teachers that want it. And, you know, we talk about, oh, there's a union problem. Our union president said, you all have to do this. You're idiots if you don't sign up for this program. Now, one of these here union saying something the district's doing very good, but our president was awesome with this, and he was the first one to sign up. But as we move on, we're end of the year, we're going to do the data again to see what parents, students, teachers compare from last year. We'll probably wait another year to do the real, you know, probably not this year, probably next year, do the data again to see the effects of everything. But we're going to continue that. Plus, the board is also asking for data decisions, you know, not just put this everywhere. What does it do to our state test? What does it do to, you know, the parents, the students, 21st century graduate teacher, whatever? And we actually came up with now hiring practices on, okay, if you come to our district, you have to have so many technology proficient that to be a teacher in our district, or you're in the academy automatically the next year. I mean, it's changed the whole dynamic of administrators, teachers, students with the data. We just keep going along with it.
I would say I agree with what Paul's doing. Essentially, I think there's a fundamental disconnect often between the technology and the instruction departments that has to be mended first. And once the engineers and the education team are together, they need to be in front of the board, in front of the principals' meetings. They need to be highly visible, and that I think is a big problem in most school districts. Is that tech team isn't in front of the board often talking about these skills that are needed, isn't showing these kinds of reports and saying this is important and this is why we need it. And once you can establish that mentality of always being there, always talking about it, and trying to move forward on it, and getting people together, you'll get more buy-in, and the board comes together, and staff comes together, and everybody starts talking about how can we make that happen, how can we make that happen, and pushing for it. I unfortunately don't have as much luck as you do with unions. So the whole idea of someone coming in for free for training is just like, wow, how do you do that? But at the same time, you do establish that level of buy-in, and you keep technology forefront. And I think that's one of the things that most districts struggle with. They're trying to keep technology forefront in that. You really have to have a concerted effort. It has to be the engineers. The engineers can't be the business guys only. The education team needs to be involved too, and the two need to work together.
I think from a school perspective, one of the things that happens with that is, you know, the data, it's real data, so you can look at that information, and then when you share it back with your faculty council, or we're a big union district too, so when you go back and you share it with your faculty council, and when you say, look at what this information is showing us about our students, about you, our faculty, and about us as administrators, then, and our parents, then you can, when you sit down and you're working on your school improvement plan, and you're putting together the next, we're going through Middle States Accreditation, which is a process that high schools go through in our area, and going through that process, having the data, being able to lay that down and say, what are our next steps? The other thing that happens, and I think just as the district is informing schools and central office is informing schools, schools need to inform the central office. And so at the same time, we have the opportunity then to share back and say, you know, look what this is showing us. These are, here's policies or practices or that are in place that are prohibiting us from taking things to the next step. Baltimore County has a no cell phone policy for students. And, you know, in our building, looking at the students that we deal with on a daily basis and looking at our teachers, we look the other way. Because we know that that's not a battle we need to necessarily fight.
But at the same time, we're trying to inform our central office, our Board of Education, those that can change that policy so it has more flex and give.
Data is leverage, basically.
Yes, that is a beautiful segue into my question. I was going to ask how far you've been able to push the envelope as far as open access for your students to networks that you may have available, along with their own personal devices and being able to use those. So, Ryan, kind of let us know where you are with not even allowing cell phones, maybe by district policy. Anything else, or other, I mean, over 80% of the kids supposedly have something on them at any given time that could be used in a way that might be engaging and advance their learning in their achievement.
I can say that, and this truly comes from a building-based administrator standpoint, because I know there's lots of technical issues that and policies even related to E-rate and all sorts of other things that I don't need to understand. But from my perspective, from what I do every single day, you know, we could spend our time, because we have a student handbook that says if a student brings a cell phone, you know, they get a detention, then they get Saturday school the next time, and then we suspend them. Because how dare they bring that to school? And until we change that, and we have, in my particular building, our policy is, you know, the cell phone can be there, you know, we're not going to hunt you down. If you're text messaging and during lunch or those kinds of things, it's not a big deal. You can use your DS, you can use those tools in the cafeteria, you can use it between the change of classes. If your headphone, we used to run down hallways pulling headphones out of kids' ears, you know, and we weren't actually pulling them out, but we were saying take your earphones out of, you know, out of your head and all this kinds of stuff. And it's those kinds of battles that in the last year and a half we've stopped fighting, I think things have improved overall in terms of discipline across the building, when you stop those kinds of battles. Our teachers, you know, a perfect example is, and I think I shared this yesterday, we have a Spanish, our world language department, we have a Spanish teacher as a Spanish podcasting website. It's blocked in school, so you can't get to it. But outside of school, that teacher is posting his Spanish podcast, his lessons, up to the site. He's telling his students, go home, put them on your iPod, on your MP3 player, mix them into your songs, listen to them on the bus as you come to school. Although, you're not supposed to have them on the bus either. But, so listen to those devices, you know, when that Spanish lesson comes up, it just cues right up. And so he has students using cell phones, using those tools in the classroom. And it's just recently, thanks to some change in policy in Baltimore County, that teacher's not breaking the rules. That in all essence, that teacher couldn't have been reprimanded by me for doing that in the classroom. So it's those kinds of, you know, things that we need to change.
I'll go one better. How many people have YouTube open in your schools?
For all.
We have it for all. And it's, you know, everyone's like, we have no problems with it. Actually, it's gone to a whole nother level with special education. Video movies, home, and actually finding problems outside of school on the web. You know, it's the parents have been grateful, and it you know, talking about cell phone policy, I mean, that's old technology. Think about it. I mean, as we get into this new digital age, you know, we blocked YouTube for a day one day, and I went to see something, and we had to our department about 50 calls from teachers saying, I can't teach today because YouTube is blocked. So, of course, I use that data all the time with the board, with everything. And, yeah, we're actually working with a couple of vendors in YouTube and all to find some filtering for it. But as of right now, I mean, we warn this with students, you know, we have conversations all the time saying, you know, we know you enjoy this perk, but it is an educational tool also. And if it's abused, it goes. And they fight with each other when another student is on a site that they're not supposed to be. They rat them out immediately. It's scary, you know, because they don't want to lose that their world. And the teachers are the same way. I mean, they once you train them and give them the benefit of this is, you know, important. And you know, my board was, I went with them with YouTube, my superintendent's like, should be blocked or not blocked? And I said, this is just like the internet when it came out. No one wanted it. Everyone's like, oh, we're going to bring all this stuff into school. I said, YouTube's the next wave, and there's going to be something else later. It's just, you know, once you say it's blocked, they're going to proxy, they're going to get in, they're going to break it, and then it's just a nightmare, you know. It's not that bad once you train. And, you know, cell phones, we have the policies too, but look the other way. You know, iPods in the computer classes. You walk on any one of our classes, all the kids have their iPods on. Yeah. Teachers, like, classroom management is wonderful right now because they're all listening. They're doing what they do at home, now in the school. They're not powering down when they come in and powering up when they go out. I mean, it's walking into the 20th century, walking out to the 21st century. I'm trying to close that gap, but it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work.
But it's being more responsive to the students and meeting them where they are, as opposed to trying to take these square pegs and fit them into round holes or triangular holes.
The reality of all of this, I think, we're talking in two different directions here, but I think the devices issue, honestly, you have to accept, and if you haven't already, accept it today, that these devices are going to be coming to your schools, and you have to start planning for them now. It's just the way that things are working. Kids are used to having these devices. They're used to working in these environments. They're used to working with them. And if you try to ban them, it's not going to work. Filtering is exactly the same way. You know that your average filter is only about 90% effective. That means 1 in 10 sites the kids are going to get to anyway. So the filtering policy that we've had has actually, I think, created this environment where teachers and students really don't have any sense of responsibility anymore, right? Sure. They offload that responsibility to the filters and just assume everything works, so nobody's really thinking about these things anymore. And I think that was a huge mistake for us as educators to put all these filters in place and put all this tightening controls in place, because we've taken the responsibility away from the kids and from the teachers. And we need to put that responsibility back in the classroom and let the kids and the teachers make the right choices about these things and understand that if someone does something they're not supposed to do, it's not a technology issue. It's a behavior issue, and it should be treated as such. And that's really the approach we should all have when it comes to these things. And that's the approach that we try to have. We have actually never had any restrictions on kids bringing their stuff to school, using monitor networks, any of those sorts of things, because we don't really see the value in it. It doesn't save us anything. It creates more aggravation than anything. And the kids really have an opportunity to learn with these things, and we want to encourage that. You know, Poll Everywhere is a fantastic thing with the cell phones. If you haven't tried Poll Everywhere, check it out. Poll Everywhere, the kids can text their answers. So why buy interactive response systems for all your classrooms? If your kids have phones, they can use the text messaging on their phones. They take surveys. It comes up right online with the graphs and everything. It's free.
What is it called?
Poll Everywhere. Right? And the kids all have cell phones. So why are we investing in these kinds of technologies when the kids are bringing those technologies to school?
It's that sort of visionary approach to problem solving that we're seeing. One, we're hearing from the kids that said the number one thing that could help them better use technology at school, what we heard in the survey last year, was to let the kids use their own devices.
Absolutely.
That's what the kids said. And the second thing that they said was the number one obstacle to their technology use at school were the filters. So, and the second one that came up is from the student perspective, their number two obstacle to technology use at school was the teacher.
Yeah.
And in fact, what the students told us last year was that technology use was better a couple of years ago before we went and trained all the teachers in how to use technology, because now the teachers are an obstacle, which is really an interesting sort of head turn. We could go on forever, but I know that you have other commitments and requirements and interesting sessions to get to. I want to thank our visionary administrators here. What a fabulous group to help us kick off and release this report. Thank you so much for all of your time and insights. And thank you, all of you, for coming and joining us for the report release today. I want to thank our good friends at Blackboard for their support.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
The amount of stuff that we
and thank you so much for joining us today. If anyone would like a copy of this,
and then the teacher goes, and then they try to get it unlocked, and they have to fill out a 6-page paper
that one matches to.
The best part of that form is it's a paper form.
And of course.
Yeah. So they fill out the paper form, and then they have to fax in and send in the paper form, and then a committee has to sit down.